coming. It's a good good turnout. So whoever wants to start the work session, take it away. Come on up, Denise, and introduce who you got. And maybe after introductions, once in a while for a work session, we introduce everybody else, since there's a wide variety of people that are here. It's interesting, so it's a good conversation. So maybe after introductions, we'll introduce, you'll have everybody introduce yourselves.
I'm Denise Mee, District Manager for Clark Conservation District.
Good morning, I'm Dean Longery, the Chairman of the Board of Supervisors for the Clark Conservation District.
And I'm John Gilarducci with FCS Group. We're the consultants that have been working with the district.
Okay. In the front row, or just introduce yourself.
I'm John Bacher. I'm the Vice Chairman of the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah.
I'm with
good. Yeah, cool. Huh? Very good. Cool. And up here, front row. Morning. Okay, thank you very much. Take it away.
Okay, let me start by introducing our topic. It's the Clark Conservation District. In the 40 plus years we've been operating, has been entirely funded by grants. Our goal is to change that, to get funding through the county, to allow us to multiply the dollars that we spend on natural resource conservation. But what's really important is often our grant funds are very limited in the areas that can be used, and there have been requests from your neighbors, my neighbors, other residents for assistance, and we've not been able to apply because of the limitations of the grant. And this is a very important want within the county, and it's been our to achieve our mission in natural resource conservation. We're looking at what the law allows us to do to increase the people that we can serve within the county, and this is one way to do that.
Well, thank you for meeting with us.
Yeah.
The district is a non-regulatory service organization, just as Dean mentioned. We focus on working with community volunteers and private landowners to solve problems and provide solutions to natural resource conservation issues. Clark Conservation District was established in 1942. And we are a special district of the state. We are non-regulatory, and we were formed to bridge that gap between private landowners and government agencies. There is no other entity like us out there, working in this non-regulatory way, involving community volunteers, private landowners, and community members providing assistance and implementing projects. Without the district, private landowners are faced with only regulatory agencies to work with.
Hey, Denise, I don't think this is true, but do we have 39 conservation districts? It seems like we have more or less, but
45,
because some counties have more than one, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I think there's 39 counties, actually.
Yeah.
So 39 sounds right, too. Conservation districts are governed by RCW 8908, and it's this legislation that provides a stable funding option for districts. The Clark Conservation District Board of Supervisors have worked with FCS Group to develop a system of rates and charges as outlined in the RCW. The purpose of this work session is to provide information on the system of rates and charges and the budget associated with it before we file the report with the county per the RCW. We'll work with partners for further program and budget development, gather support, and ask that you have a public hearing to consider our proposal. The district activities fall into five major categories: farm and agricultural lands, water quality and quantity, working lands, food system economics and development, aquatic habitat, and upland habitat. We have very brief descriptions of each program here today because of limited time. So over the next couple weeks, I'll send more details about the activities and partners in these programs, what we've done in the past, and what needs we can meet in the future. A few key activities under farm and ag land, though, include installing best management practices like irrigation efficiency projects and assisting landowners with local, state, and federal regulations and permitting. All of our programs provide technical and financial assistance and support, educational opportunities, and engineering or design and permit assistance. A few key activities under the water quality and quantity include assisting neighborhoods with stormwater facility maintenance and restoration, and failing septic systems. The Working Lands Food System Program assists in implementing projects for farmland preservation and food system development. This includes many of the activities in the APAC report, like grants for ag businesses, further processing facilities, agricultural districts, and numerous other activities that provide for the economic growth of our local farms and food production. Aquatic habitat includes a salmon recovery projects and stream projects, but we also work with landowners on slope stabilization, wetland restoration, and flooding issues. Upland habitat includes forest landowners, but others as well, interested in having native plants on their property or encouraging wildlife use. Activities can include large acreage habitat, like oak prairies and forest lands, and small parcels interested in backyard habitat.
So, Denise, I will say a farm plan when we did our, when you helped us do our habitat ordinance, you had a mix. Seems like these kind of are all mixed together and times, aren't they? I mean, you did a pretty good sized farm, but you did habitat for the stream, you did fencing, and
so. Right, they do all go together. It was really a little difficult actually to categorize what we do, because it's really based on site specific land uses and what's on that site and that parcel. So there will be combinations of these programs on different landowners' properties, definitely. The district is currently grant-funded. We do receive a small amount of basic funding from the Washington State Conservation Commission. The district has been able to leverage these funds with other grants, and on average, for every dollar of basic funding the district has received, we've brought in $7 into the community through grant funding. However, grants are becoming less and less available, and they fluctuate greatly. We can have $1 million grant, and we can have a $200 grant. Implementing a system of rates and charges provides a reliable, consistent funding source for our programs. We do use our funding wisely. We're very effective and efficient. We work very hard to stretch every dollar we have to make an impact.
So, as you've heard, the district has been able to do a lot and continues to do a lot with very little in ongoing reliable revenue, but is able to leverage that revenue into grant funding. So what we've been helping to put together is this proposal to implement a system of rates and charges. Rates and charges are authorized as of about 5 years ago, authorized now in statute 8908.405. Conservation districts have always had the authority to impose assessments on property. That's not something that Clark Conservation District has done. Many other districts in the state have. There are some legal questions about that have arisen about assessments. And so that's been the impetus for this new statute, relatively new statutory language, allowing rates and charges. What these essentially do is allows a conservation district to charge a per acre amount with a ceiling of 10 cents an acre within the, and these are annual amounts, to properties in the district, and then a per parcel amount as well, also capped. You see the way that the ceilings are set depends on the population of the county. In Clark County, just shy of that $480,000 population threshold, so the ceiling per parcel would be $5, again, $5 a year. So the law allows a district to charge the per acre or the per parcel or both in order to recover the costs of providing conservation district services. It also authorizes a charge for forest lands that is very limited and discounted for commercial forest properties. Discounted to the extent that when you run the numbers, you wonder if it's even worth doing those property types. So just to quickly touch on why rates versus assessments, the questions that have come up about assessments have to do with the requirement that when challenged to do so, you need to be able to demonstrate that the services being provided that a property is being assessed for actually increase the assessed value of that property. And with conservation district services, many of the benefits are indirect: water quality, upland habitat. These are very important benefits, but they don't, you couldn't say that a particular property is impacted in their assessed value by those services. They are a very general benefit. So the thought has been that it would be very difficult to defend those assessments. Rates have a much easier standard to meet, and it's okay to charge for that indirect benefit, indirect services provided. One of the landmark cases that supports that concept is actually Teeter versus Clark County, which happened right here, regarding the stormwater utility. So we can go forward with a lot of confidence with a rate program or system of rates that they will be legally defensible. But as I mentioned, they have the same ceilings and caps as the assessment structure. So the way that we have approached these, and the first two that we worked with were Pearson King Conservation Districts, who approached this together in 2012. we had the benefit of the legal assistance that actually wrote the statute, as well as the lawyer for King County, who could, we could sit around the table and talk through the approach and make sure that we were within legal bounds as they had intended them. So the approach that we laid out with them and have applied here is you define the key programs or services, and Denise talked about what those are: farm and ag lands, water quality and quantity, working lands, aquatic and upland habitats. Then, looking at those services, we try to determine if there's some small portion of those services which are of benefit to a specific, directly to a specific group of customers. Sometimes that's the case with working lands, for example, which may be of particular benefit to agricultural customers. So that's the first step, is determining which of these services provide direct and which provide indirect benefits. Most of them are providing indirect benefits. We then, once we have those buckets, determine what would be the best way to recover those costs in the per parcel or the per acre charge. And by best, I mean the fairest way. An example of that is if you have irrigation assistance, for example, as a service we've run into in eastern Washington. That makes sense to recover the cost of providing those services on a per acre basis, because the more land you have to irrigate, the more you should pay for those, the benefits of that service. So we will make that determination and then look at how the different services or programs benefit different types of customers: residential versus commercial versus agricultural. And that leads to calculated rates by type of customer, which we've learned from the legal assistance that we've had is an important distinction in rate making. So in case that wasn't crystal clear, we have it, what I just said, basically shown graphically here. That service cost that we're starting with at the top of this graphic is basically the program cost. Again, we're determining then how much of it is of direct benefit to customers and how much is indirect benefit, and then per parcel or per acre, and then how those different land use categories are served by that program.
I have a question. So it's it may be implied, but it's not crystal clear to me, so if you could help me out here. The conservation district services, are these imposed because of geographic circumstances, or is it voluntary and by invitation from the property owner?
All our services are voluntary, but we do have district boundaries. So
yes. So the tax or rates would be by boundary, by within your boundary.
Yes.
For all properties. But you providing services is based on maybe you notifying a farmer or a landowner what services you have to offer, and them voluntarily entering into some kind of agreement with you to do those, correct? Okay, good. I did understand that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So there, this gets at or is related to your question. The customer base is the county, which is the, also the boundary of the conservation district, that with a few exceptions. There are five cities which have essentially opted out of the conservation district. They made that decision in 1942, so only the boundaries that were in effect in 1942 are exempted from the conservation district. So those are shown here. Le Center, Yackel, thank you. Ridgefield, Washougal, and Camas. And their 1942 boundaries, which you can imagine have changed quite a bit. there are a total of about 160,000 chargeable parcels in the county and 361,000 chargeable acres in the county, just to give you a sense of the scale, and then with those exclusions.
So when was the 160?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, no. So the 160? Oh, in 1942. So Vancouver and Battleground are in
Actually,
the district.
Actually, they are. And Battleground was formed after the district in 1960, I think, or somewhere in the early 60s or late 50s. So their parcels were already in the district, so they were in. In 1969, the city of Vancouver actually petitioned to be included into the district. And that just shows how much agriculture was still going on down in the Vancouver area and the port mm-hmm. area. So all of the city of Vancouver is in and the port as well.
So as cities had their original boundaries in 1942. Whether they're in or out, whatever the agreement was at the time the city came about, if it was 1942 or whatever. So as they expand their city limits, does the agreement follow the expansion area, or is it only what the original geographic area was at the time?
The original. Yes, only the parcels within the 1942 boundaries of those cities outside the district.
It's interesting. I think the reason for that is because at the time that decision was made, those properties surrounding those original city boundaries, they were then in the conservation district, and so the annexation of the city into into larger areas doesn't knock them out of the conservation district service area without some action being taken.
So then the 160,499 parcels, that's what that represents, that original 1942 city exclusions, and then what was...
That's right. Okay. And we do have the information for you if you're curious about what the impacts to revenue would be if those cities were to opt in. It's not a whole lot of revenue because the boundaries were so small, but it would have some impact.
And the cities can opt into the district just like Vancouver did. And we have very strong focused urban stormwater practices and assistance we're willing to offer, and working with the cities to do that. So they do have an opportunity to opt in the district as well.
So in calculating initial rates, the first step from our standpoint in the analytical process is trying to get our arms around what are the costs that we're trying to recover. And so what you see before you is a budget for the current year that we've used as the basis for 2018 rates as well. For each of the different program areas that Denise described, you see forecasted annual costs here totaling about $1.1 million. That becomes the target to achieve in our cost recovery through rates. This is a...
So that was the 2017 budget. So has this changed a lot? I mean, during the heyday, when we were doing a lot of stuff around Lacamas Lake, Salmon Creek, all that, you had a lot of grants. The budget must have been higher, or... Well,
actually, no, this is our...
Is this
our projected budget for the projects and activities that the community, we feel... we could use this funding for.
Okay.
So it's not what our budget is now. This is what the community has said they'd like help with.
Okay.
And this is stuff that we can't initially do with grants.
I get it.
But our budget is, it really varies according to grants, just like you
said.
So we have had budgets when we have projects, large projects, we'll have a budget of that annually. We've had budgets down to a little over 200,000 annually, depending on projects, up to a million annually. So it fluctuates a lot depending on the projects we're doing.
And one of the things that we're seeing in districts that already have assessments or systems of rates and charges in place, and those numbers are growing, the number of districts, is they're able, with a stable source of revenue like this, they're able to continue leveraging this funding into many more grants. And even if it's not $7 to $1, they've been very successful in, you know, increasing the bang for the buck and getting, as I say, leveraging that into more funding for programs that are related to the ones you see here. So that leveraging concept is really important to all the conservation districts we've worked with and will be here as well, turning this into much more services that customers feel throughout the county.
The source of those grants, is there any source other than state grants? Are there any federal grants?
We can receive federal grants as well.
Have we applied for federal grants in the past?
Sure. Yeah, we apply for all kinds of grants.
Oh.
The only grants we don't qualify for are those foundation grants, because technically we're not a 501c3. So there are some funding sources that we can apply for.
And what department is that out of federally?
Well, it's usually salmon recovery funding money, or EPA.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Got a quick question.
Or USDA.
Or USDA, that's true too.
Our biggest partner for years has been out of the Department of Agriculture, NRCS.
So it sounds like we actively look for any kind of grant that might be available for this kind of use.
We do. Yeah,
That's how we survive.
Yeah, that's our only source. Yeah, funding.
We don't wait for them to come to us.
No, we can't.
Beating the bush.
We can't.
Yeah, thank you.
A quick question on this budget. So you're saying this is your potentially projected 2017 budget based on requests that you've already received from property owners, landowners, projects.
Right, and what we feel would develop into other projects that maybe aren't accounted for in those dollars, but in the future we know that we want to get to that point. So this also includes development costs for future programs too. Within these categories, an example might be if we're looking at the food system development, you know, it may not be that we can get to have a food hub within the first couple of years. It may take, you know, 5 or 6 years to develop some processing facilities and transportation, things like that, but this is leading up to that. So there may be more funding down the road into that program or not. So I'm
looking further in this presentation to find out. I was going to wait and ask this question. Do we have the number of parcels, people, landowners who have requested service in the past on kind of an annual basis?
Yeah, I will have those numbers for you.
Okay.
Not in this presentation, but I'm going to get those to you.
Okay. They probably would have been important with this as well.
I have the same question written down on my notes.
In this budget, are your administrative costs spread? Are they kind of allocated to each, or is that like in addition in terms of, I mean, the grant writers, the administration, the river? I mean,
it's
every
all
grant
in there.
Comes with lots
it's
of
all
okay. So it's spread throughout the
community. And what, so from the council, maybe other city councils too, for instance, when we did our habitat ordinance, you were the kind of the lead on that for the farm plans. And I think what really people don't understand to some degree is before we had the Environmental Services Department, we're probably the county with the least restrictive habitat ordinance in the entire state. And the reason that we are the least restrictive is that you are supposed to have a farm plan with you. If you do not have a farm plan on your farm, you have to resort back to the development regulations, which theoretically says you have to be 200 foot from the stream or until you get a farm plan. So we've gone away from that, but the only reason I bring that up is that, so we have as a council, there's all kinds of stuff that enters into it, our stormwater regs, you know, everything. So we have all these rules kind of come, and we use you, because a regular landowner much rather see your car coming down the road than a county car coming down the road. It's the way life is. So we really impact your budget to some degree. So if we, you know, get this harebrained idea and we say, okay, this is what it is, is there ways to respond within that budget to say, this is coming down the road, they're making an ag commission, and we have some responsibility in staffing the ag commission, which is going to change your budget. I'm just wondering, so is that flexibility there?
It's definitely there.
Okay.
Yes, and we plan on doing that. And that's, like I mentioned before, categorizing our activities is a little difficult because they do cross land uses and natural resources. But that also gives us the flexibility to move that funding to priorities. And I've been working with multiple county staff and developing what we can put into those different programs. And that's one reason I've not brought those specific detailed numbers to you yet, is because we're still working on what programs might the county staff and county feel are priority. And I want to make sure we can get those in there initially. But yes, this is a flexible number, depending on what the priorities are.
We make the rates based on a snapshot of the information that we have at the time, but you are not beholden to those allocations, the numbers for specific programs. That you have that flexibility legally to change those as well. Okay. So we talk, and you reinforced the point that I wanted to make, and that is one of the benefits of a conservation district is that Denise talked about it being a non-regulatory agency. People tend to reach out to a non-regulatory agency before they would come to the county, which obviously has the authority to regulate whatever they're doing. The other thing, and we've touched on this as we've talked about the services being provided, it sounds like we've talked a lot about individual property owners requesting services from the conservation district. There's you know, many, if not most, of these services are provided proactively and are a benefit throughout the county. They're not just in response to individual property owners requesting assistance. So anyway, I wanted to make sure.
Another quick question, if you don't mind. What was your 2016 budget?
Well, I think it was probably about $360,000.
You could view this as a strategic plan,
yeah, and
slash budget.
Right, and we did a planning process, and we've given you our five-year plan, which it has this number in it, and it was through that planning process that we developed this budget number with gathering the information that we did and working with partners.
So the 360, does that represent then you talked about your leveraging 7-to-1.
Right. So we get a small amount of basic funding from the commission, varies usually about $70,000 in 12-5 in basic funding, so we can use that to basically help keep the doors open. And then we get about $60,000 in what we call implementation funds. And those implementation funds are available for us to use as our priorities. And we use those as matching funds for other grants. That's how those dollars are used. Because to get grants, you have to be able to match them with something. Mm-hmm. And that is our basic funding to match others. So with that $60,000, we had about $360,000 to $400,000 budget.
So if I may, the $60,000 and the $70,000 you just said come as basic funding. One's basic funding, one's implementation funds. They come from the commission?
Right. So our basic funding from the commission is $12,500 a year. And then we have what we call an implementation, but it's all kind of basic funding in that sense. But the implementation part of that, it is still a grant, and it's all dependent on the state budget. So it's coming from a state agency. So that fluctuates as well. So it also makes it very difficult to use it as matching funds when we're not sure what the state's going to decide.
Okay.
To.
I think I'm misunderstanding. I'm disconnecting here. You said $12,500.
Right.
But you also gave two different figures.
Right.
$70,000 and $60,000.
Mm-hmm. We get about $60,000 in implementation, but I'm including that in the $70,000. The $12,500
oh,
and the
okay.
$60,000.
It's
about
$60,000 plus $70,000.
No. $70,000
of the $70,000 is implementation.
Is implementation where
okay.
we can use for matching funds.
Thank you.
Sorry, it's complicated.
So if we, you know, like if we talk to City of Vancouver or Battleground or something, to a city residence or a subdivision, I think one of the biggest hurdles for them is stormwater ponds. Essentially, the county has two things we do for stormwater ponds, besides making them look ugly. We mow them and we tell people what not to do. That's all we do.
Yeah.
We don't have the time to be proactive and how to make them look nice or whatever.
Right.
How to tell a landowner how to keep them up or whatever, you know. So when we have that circumstance, and it is a big dilemma, can we just say, all right, conservation, you figure this out and you put them in one of them spots?
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely, yeah. Okay. And we have quite a few already that the county has contacted the homeowners or the neighborhood association and said, you know, you need to fix your stormwater facility or maintain your stormwater facility. Most homeowners don't know where to start and don't have the funds to do that. So that is already something that we're looking at and hoping to help with.
A new subdivision would be required to have that, though, in their plan. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, right.
So, did I understand that we'll be getting those figures?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, in establishing the rates that would support this program, the first thing we do, and if you'll look at the bottom right-hand corner of this these tables, you'll notice that line labeled total costs matches the total from the previous page. That's the budget. But if we want to know how much would be needed from rates, we need to deduct estimated revenues from other sources. So this is where we take out the $70,000 and a reasonable projection of other revenues that would come into the district, because we don't want to double collect those needs. So that we've, and again, this is guesstimating based on the semi-reliable annual grant funding, and then what we see in the future and based on what we've seen in the past. So our target becomes $972,000. The calculated rates you see are in the upper left-hand corner of this table, $5.77 and 78 cents per parcel, and per acre rates from 12 cents to 14 cents. Again, all annual. Those both exceed the statutory ceilings. So what you see on the next slide is we shrink those down proportionally so that the highest rates by category are at the ceilings of $5 per parcel and 10 cents an acre. That's about $140,000 revenue loss against that target. So what we forecast would be generated if the county were to move forward with this, about $831,000 in a year to apply to that strategic plan or budget. So as a summary, the board of the Conservation District has to act to adopt the system of rates and charges this month, and then it would come back to the county board for adoption or consideration in the fall. We mentioned that the rates have ceilings, cannot be raised without concurrence of County Council and the Board of Supervisors. The district's requesting a 10-year term for the proposed rates.
Another quick question. So at $830,000, then that would also be used to leverage future grant money? And would that 7-to-1, or is that kind of, that's pretty
optimistic? We can
optimistic.
Hope that, but that's pretty optimistic.
So even if it was, 5-to-1, you're still looking at a budget of $360,000 to potentially $3.5 million. That's a big leap.
We've managed, upwards of $1 million in the past. We've had upwards of 15 different funding sources at once. The district and staff have been able to manage those kinds of different reporting, different finances coming from different agencies and different organizations fairly well. We are audited by the state and have clean audits every time, so it is manageable, and we also understand that we wouldn't be here and wouldn't be able to do our business without partners, and we intend for our partners with all these programs to also work with programs that they've already established that maybe there's just not funding for them, or maybe they can't get them off the ground because they don't qualify for a certain grant. One of the ideas behind this is to provide our partners with some funding to move that program.
So who would be those partners?
County, Vancouver Watershed Alliance in the city, the neighborhood associations. We work with the other CPU, other agencies, Recovery Board, all the community groups. We've talked with Kiwanis and Lions, Farm Bureau. We've talked with, we partner with everybody we can. When it comes to grants, you really have to have a community proposal and a community project to make them work. And we've established those relationships over many years.
So I have a question about, you're looking for us to be able to lock in rates for 10 years so that you can plan going forward. And what I see is on a 10-year horizon, the likelihood, the high likelihood, that we will see Clark County changing land use patterns, that we will see more and more density moving north, moving on to, so some of these lands will change from maybe agriculture or other uses where people voluntarily have asked for your services. And what we're likely to see is the county become more and more parcelized with different standards for development. Have you thought about how this program and future of this program will work into our changing land use plan as we go forward? Because eventually, it's almost like the land with the need for this may end up shrinking because of changing development codes depending on changes of land use and density. How are we thinking about that and integrating that?
Let me address that briefly. And brevity, in terms of the comprehensiveness of what we're presenting,
yeah.
You know that this is a limited presentation. You know that we're looking at explaining the process for rates and charges. You've had great questions, and I can only think of one way that you can quickly get an answer, and that is look at the counties that have had this for several years. Pierce, King, Spokane, very urbanized areas. You know, I want to see, let's call it the rural nature of Clark County for myself and my family. That's what I love the most. The reality is we're continuing to grow. And we have always wanted to provide more services for the urban areas because that really contributes to all aspects of our environment that we're benefiting from. So looking at these other counties, these other districts that are very urbanized, that have had this system, rates and charges and assessments, you'll see that, yes, there's a lot we can do for the urban areas. Our grants in the past are very much focused on non-urban areas, and that has affected where we can actually provide assistance. But the need is in urban as well as suburban and rural. And so we really will grow into those areas. But again, our growth has been very limited due to our sources of funding. And that's really the reason that we've been looking at this for years, because we've had this statute, we've had the opportunity to have assessments and now rates and charges for years. And the point is we have a demand, and we'll convince you of that. There's a real benefit. Partners are going to be the county. Partners are going to be other organizations that serve the county and the residents. So your questions are great, and they're ones that we've discussed and plan to address. Again, it's the horse and the cart. What comes first? It takes a staff to really serve. It takes a program to grow. We can show you examples from other counties that have had this where the growth has been fantastic. We really have, we go only where we're invited. If we didn't have the service to provide that people want, we wouldn't have been here since the 40s. And we want to continue and to continue effectively a more stable source of funding. The people that benefit, our neighbors, me, you, we're going to pay for it. I mean, yeah, we get money from the state, and yeah, we're paying that, but this benefit is local. And so in my mind, as a citizen for over 30 years here in Clark County, with all my family living here in Clark County, I am willing to pay that cup of coffee a year to get these services so that I can continue to enjoy that natural resources that make me love Clark County. So So, I mean, that's a value. We're stewards. We're supposed to be stewards for these resources, and this is going to help us be better stewards in Clark County.
I have a question. We have seven, one inactive drainage districts within the county, which is becoming more and more of a problem. They each have their own particular problems, but as the city goes into them, you know, we have one under suspension that really the county's liable for, and then the others, you know, that are hanging out there. As other, I would like to explore also in this, as if we're going this area, is how we can interact with them, drainage districts, because they're also on a property tax statement. So people are going to be confused. I'm paying drainage districts, conservation futures. Plus, we have the weed board that's trying to figure out, you know, other counties have an assessment on the weed board. So, and then we have our own budget, you know, which is, in a way, you know, being a jealous councilman of trying to figure out user fees, is maybe how much general fund that we can pawn off on you. It sounds bad, probably, but, you know, but how much we can transfer that to a user fee also. So I think it would be an interesting topic.
Yeah, I'm happy to work with you, of course, on that.
Okay.
And that was one thing that Dean brought up. You know, we have an hour here to tell you about,
I know, yeah,
about the system, which is really complex. So I have every intention of meeting with you multiple times and going into details about these programs and how we can meet the needs of the county as well as the community.
I just want to commend you for the work that you have done on the small amount of funds that you have raised, and you know, it's evident throughout the county. So I do appreciate your work.
Thank you.
So the next steps then?
The Board of the Conservation District will be consider adopting,
okay,
the system of rates and charges this month.
Okay.
And then it will come back to the county.
Back to us.
Back to the county council.
For a public hearing?
Approval. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know. I would, if we have a public hearing, the council, I would hopefully, we don't have it on this dais, it's somewhere battleground or, you know, somewhere else. So.
A hearing?
A hearing, yeah.
Why? Why would we do that?
Because I think it'd just be a hearing, be able to get out in the community for this type of a hearing.
Well, it would be to pass a rates increase, right?
Yeah.
It would be passing
that
ordinance.
Because here's the people, it's almost like a GMA hearing.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, we can discuss that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I think everybody knows where we are.
I know, but still good to get out. So. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything at 11?